Hi, this is Amy Beheimer, and you are listening to the Habit Hub for Autoimmune Health, Habit 40, Get Sweaty with Dr. Delaine Vaughn. I want to take a minute to make sure you're getting my weekly newsletter, All Things Autoimmune Health, where each week I share three quick pieces of info, inspo, or insight that are helping me feel healthy, especially with a diagnosis. Sign up at www.amybeheimercoaching.com/newsletter. Or head to the link in the show notes. I'll see you in your inbox. Welcome to the Habit Hub for Autoimmune Health Podcast. You're in the right place if you want to be and feel healthy, no matter what your diagnosis, and you're open to using habits to get there. It's time to shift from managing your autoimmune disease to creating autoimmune health. I'm your host, Amy Beheimer, a coach and a doctor of pharmacy on a mission to feel healthy with multiple sclerosis. Each week, I'll be sharing evidence-based information and real-life inspiration from my life, my guests, and my clients, all habit heroes brave enough to turn a desire for health into daily decisions to create it. Get ready for the what, why, and how of habits proven to do your mind and body good. Here, we make changes in a way that feels amazing so they last. Let's have some fun. Hi, everybody. I am so glad you are tuning in, where I am chatting with Delaine Vaughn. She is a board-certified family medicine doctor and certified life coach with over 25 years of experience in healthcare. She attended Wichita State University, where she completed a Bachelor of Science in Nursing with a minor in chemistry. Dr. Vaughn worked as an emergency room nurse for several years before attending University of Kansas School of Medicine and completing a family medicine residency program at Wesley Family Medicine. As a physician, she has worked as an inpatient hospitalist, an outpatient community provider, and as an emergency room physician. She's passionate about disease prevention. In her life coaching practice, Dr. Vaughn helps women reverse type 2 diabetes naturally so they can reclaim their vitality and longevity. Her motto is, if you don't like the healthcare system, use less of it by living a naturally healthy life. I love that motto. Can I borrow it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Such an awesome background, and nobody is wondering why you're here as an expert to share with us on the Habit Hub once they hear that.
Well, Amy, I'm so glad to be here. Thanks so much for having me. I love this opportunity, and I really, really love what you're doing. I think you and I have discussed this before, but I have a specific interest in autoimmune health because my family has a strong history of rheumatoid arthritis. My mother and my grandmother both had it. So I really love what you're doing, and I'm recommending you to people, and I'm just really happy to be here.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And so you are specializing in helping people with type 2 diabetes. So for all the listeners, what is the link between, there's type 1 diabetes, there's type 2 diabetes. We know one's autoimmune, one's not. So give us an overview of what people need to know.
Yeah. So type 1 is a little different from type 2. And there is thought to be an autoimmune effect of it, but as all autoimmune diseases, the reality of all of them is there is something within our nurturing. I like to say we've got DNA, we have biology, we have nature that needs to be nurtured. I think that that's brilliant. I didn't come up with it. Somebody said it to me. But surely we all have DNA that can lead to some things. And I think autoimmune disease is frequently that. We have DNA. And then there's something about our nurturing that causes that DNA to kind of malfunction and predisposes us to some of these diseases. And I think autoimmune disease and certainly autoimmune or type 1 diabetes falls in that category. But it is definitely something not solely nurturing has kind of double whammied type 1 diabetics. So that is a little different. Most type 1 diabetics really do need insulin. They absolutely need to be given what we call exogenous or injectable insulin. Type 2 diabetics are not necessarily requiring insulin. The type 1 isn't making insulin, and that's why they need the injections. Type 2 is making so much insulin that their cells actually get overwhelmed and they just stop responding to it. In both of these scenarios, the food that we have has just an amazing impact on that disease state. For type 2 diabetics, the women that I work with, and this is really 95% of diabetics in America, for type 2 diabetics, adjusting that food and learning how to eat in a way that aligns with your biology is going to lessen your need for meds and likely remove your need for meds entirely. We can have a huge impact on your disease process with the food that you eat. Certainly type 1 diabetes, the strategies that I teach to help women with type 2 diabetes, quote unquote, reverse their diabetes, those strategies are the same strategies that were used 100 and 150 years ago, long before injectable insulin was ever created, to help type 1 diabetics prolong their life. So these are old strategies. And so there's just this huge impact that our lifestyle has. And that's really where I help type 2 diabetics really impact their disease state.
I love that you say that, because I often will attract some people that may not even have an autoimmune disease. And they're like, well, is this good for me? And I'm like, it's good for everybody and everybody. So, you know, a lot of the things that we are talking about with lifestyle, it doesn't matter what your diagnosis is. It doesn't matter what's happening. And it's really neat. You probably see this too, when people's family members can even start getting in on it, and it's good for everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Some people want to split hairs about reversing, quote unquote, reversing type 2 diabetes. And I do use that terminology, but I understand when people are like, you can't reverse type 2 diabetes.
Yeah.
And my mindset, you know, some people think there is a genetic defect that's causing type 2 diabetes. And for me, we all have the genetics. I mean, this is the human biology. We all have the genetics that leads to type 2 diabetes. Because the foods that we eat really aren't meant for humans to eat. And that's where I'm like, we don't need to split hairs about whether you have rice or potatoes or quinoa. What we need to do is cut out Pop-Tarts. Like, that's the problem, child. Let's get rid of those and see what happens. So I agree. It's like, yes, everybody benefits from these lifestyle modifications.
Yes. Oh, I love that. And, you know, I was giving a talk last month, and everybody has heard, most likely, you've heard that analogy that genes loads the gun and environment pulls the trigger. Have you heard that analogy?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm on a mission to overwrite that one with a different one. And because, you know, when you're talking about it in those terms, it's like a one and done thing. So the trigger is pulled and we're done. And it's really not. It's our environment impacts, yes, the initiation of these diseases, but also the progression of them and how that you feel while you have them. And so a better analogy is, and tell me if you agree, this will be good to see because you're so familiar with this, but, you know, our genes are like the keys on a piano. So those are set. We have the same number of keys, but how we play those keys, what tempo, what order that we play them determines the music that comes out, determines what our experience in these bodies actually is. And it's ongoing.
Yeah. I think that that's a great way to look at it. Using the trigger and the loaded gun kind of, I think some people look at like, oh, some people get the gun and some people don't get the gun.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, I grew up in a rural state. So like everybody went hunting and had guns more than whether somebody got a gun or didn't get a gun. What it is everybody has a gun. Everybody has the genetics for it.
Yep.
Learning how to use it safely is probably more powerful. You know what I mean? Like everybody needs to learn how to use it safely.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, I love the idea of thinking of it as piano, as music, and like, what are we going to do with those keys? What are we going to do with those notes? Are we going to create something, you know, sinister and I'm like scary with it? Or are we going to create something beautiful and peaceful with it? Because all of it's available to us.
I love that. And we've already talked on food, and I know that you could give us a habit from every single spoke of the Habit Hub, but I'm excited today because today's habit, tell us what today's habit is.
Yeah. So today's habit that I think is most powerful for lots of humans, and certainly for type 2 diabetics, is getting sweaty, like the act of getting sweaty, right? So we talk about exercise. Everybody knows that the human body is meant to move and that exercise is important and beneficial for our health. Yes, movement in general is helpful, but if you want to up-level that with a habit, getting sweaty with your movement is super powerful.
Does it matter how we get sweaty, or is it just the act of getting sweaty?
The act of getting sweaty, at least for type 2 diabetics, what happens is that, again, you know, type 2 diabetes is insulin resistance. So you have so much insulin in your system that your cells become resistant to the effect of that insulin. So they don't do what they're meant to do. When insulin is present in a non-diabetic environment, cells open up and they bring glucose in and they burn it off as fuel. That's what's meant to happen with insulin. But when cells become overexposed to insulin, they stop doing that. They don't open up. They don't burn that energy off. They don't. And of course, then your blood sugars climb and that's what we pick up. So when you get sweaty, you bypass the need for insulin to burn off that glucose. So instead of requiring the cells requiring insulin to open up and bring that glucose in, all the insulin under the sun can be present. But when you're sweaty, your cells actually bring that glucose in a non-insulin dependent way, and they burn that glucose off, lowering your blood sugar. It's a super, super, super powerful, sneaky, clever biology hack. In addition to kind of this backdoor method of burning off your glucose, the effect of getting sweaty exercise, the effect of that lasts 48 to 72 hours after an exercise event.
That's amazing.
Super, super powerful. So yeah, that is how and why it's so powerful. I just think it's a really, really clever biology hack and think it's probably secondary to food, the most powerful thing that we can do.
And this is where knowing the what and the why behind can really help, because when we kind of approach what we're doing with the intentionality of, okay, I'm getting my heart rate up, I am going to do something that is strong enough to actually get sweaty, then we can see that ripple effect, like you said, for a day or two even after.
Yeah, it's huge.
So I know that likely, even for me, you know, my go-to to get sweaty pre my autoimmune disease, pre MS, was to run. I could do it anywhere and I could just get out there and without a doubt run. That is not really in my wheelhouse anymore.
Yeah.
You know, balance can be an issue, falling, we always have to worry about safety. So what are, and also the amount of time that we have the energy to get sweaty, is there a certain amount of time that we need to be staying sweaty for, or does that matter?
Yeah, I think that, you know, 10 to 20 minutes is probably the sweet spot. You know, 30 minutes just means you're getting more potent dose of that quote unquote medicine, right? So I think 10 to 20 minutes is probably the goal. I definitely understand. I'm a runner. I love running. I've always loved running since I was very young. My body definitely at nearly 50 handles running a lot differently as it did when I was 15 and started. But my mother, of course, and my grandmother, that was never, she was debilitated, like on disability, legally on disability by age 35 with her rheumatoid arthritis.
Wow.
So that was clearly never in her wheelhouse, right? And my mom, she was diagnosed, I guess, probably in her mid-50s with rheumatoid. And it's never really been on her plate either. Like that part is not going to be available to her. So certainly lower impact things like biking, arc trainers, ellipticals, all of those are certainly ways to get sweaty, cardiovascular sweatiness. That's a little safer and a little gentler on the body. And again, you don't need to do this every day. The benefits last 2 to 3 days. So if you're doing this 3 times a week, that's awesome. And then for those who really can't get, they just don't have the ability to, my mother is at a point right now where maybe she could get on an arc trainer, maybe she could get on an elliptical. But my grandmother, I never remember my grandmother being in that position. And what we found, and I think this is the most amazing thing ever, is sauna work is as powerful, has the same benefits. It mimics, this is how they describe it, it mimics aerobic activity. So sauna work, 20 minutes again, that's kind of your goal. I want to say that you're shooting for 160 degrees in the sauna. I'm wanting to say that that's the number, but I'd have to double check. But I find that that's always what the sauna at my gym is set at. So whenever I knew the number, I compared them and they were the same. So I think it's pretty typical sauna heat. You don't have to have it extra hot, but 20 minutes and that mimics that cardiovascular effect that you get with exercise. So I think that that's just a different way of getting sweaty. It's really the getting sweaty that's powerful.
It's really the getting sweaty. And to bring it back to if we're listening and you have an autoimmune disease, in addition to all those glucose benefits and that hack, getting sweaty is one of the best ways to help our bodies release toxins. And so, you know, we likely have a set of genes, we likely have things happening in our body that holds on to toxins a bit more or is a bit more sensitive to toxins. And so there is nothing better to clear that than getting sweaty. So definitely a win-win.
Yeah. I know that I used to know sauna being beneficial for thyroid health because of the removal of toxins. And then when I heard that it like also has this mimicking of aerobic activity, I was like, game on, mama needs a sauna.
Exactly. Yeah. And pairing the two together. I know there's a lot of good studies out there about getting in the sauna immediately after, you know, and really seeing that amplified. So, and likely it feels good. And so, like I say, things that are good for you, usually your body is going to reward you and let you know, hey, I want to do more of this.
Yeah.
And thanks for sharing and brainstorming that those options for safe ways to do this. If the things that maybe you once loved, or maybe you never loved running, but you want to make sure that we never want there, you know, there usually is a way to problem solve around whatever obstacle your brain is trying to tell you as to why you are not able to get sweaty. You know, your brain doesn't necessarily want you to change and doesn't necessarily want you to put in that hard work. And so whatever it is, you know, bring it to whoever you're working with, whether it's your coach, whether it's me in the membership, bring whatever obstacle you think is coming up and let's problem solve for it.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant. And one of the things you said in one of your recent podcasts was having a thought plan. Mm. And I think that's a great place to implement a thought plan. When you're trying to implement new habits, of course, your brain is going to want to do what it knows because it's comfortable, right? And having that thought plan for, oh, I know that my brain's going to be like, oh, I can't run, so I'm just going to sit and do nothing. And versus whatever your thought plan is, curiously, like, oh, I wonder what would happen though if I did this. I wonder how that would benefit me.
So. Yeah. And I've had to use that because my brain will offer, well, you can't run, so it's hard to get sweaty. And my thought plan is, okay, what can I do? Or I can do things. And I was fortunate enough, one of my good friends was moving out of state. And so he brought over his elliptical. And so I have an elliptical down in my basement. And getting on, my thought plan is, I can do this for 2 minutes today. So my brain will try to say, I don't have time for this or not today, but getting on there and really just trying to go all out, even for 2 minutes, trusting in these tiny things being able to add up over time.
Yes. So powerful.
And I don't know about you, but it doesn't matter how many times I go up and down stairs, you know, at the hospital, there's lots of flights. I can do it every day at a slow pace that's safe. I will get sweaty and I will get out of breath no matter how much I feel like I'm training for it. Do you feel that way?
Absolutely. You had talked about this article that talked about even like between, or you, maybe it was one of your recommendations, but even between like sitcoms and that, you know, 23 minutes and then you have like 7 minutes. I live in a house, like my attic, my third floor attic is my office. And so there are the opportunity for three flights of stairs in my house anytime, anywhere you want. I'm like, oh yeah, I could just go and climb the stairs for like between like shows. It would be so easy. Yeah. So yes, because I agree with you, like climbing stairs can be intense, you know?
And anything that produces a little bit of sweat, and same thing on a treadmill or out in a neighborhood, speed is not my friend. You know, I say I'm not as fast as I once was, but anytime you can add some incline, man, it gets the sweat pores going. It gets the pores nice and sweaty.
Yeah, absolutely. It's huge. It's amazing. So it gets the heart rate up. It's all those good things. So yeah.
And I so appreciate you bringing this because I've heard, you know, the opposite of a profound truth is also true. So if you're listening, you've heard our other habits about mobility and about movement and all movement is good. Well, really considering, yes, slow movement and movement that fits into our day is so important, but breaking out and thinking, wait, what if I had to get sweaty? What would I do? How would I do it? I just so love that.
Yeah. And what's the power? And this is probably true for any habit that seems unavailable. What is the power behind, if you could get there, what's the power behind it? I think sometimes it's so easy to fall into hopelessness, like, oh, that's not on the table for me. Like, even thinking about my grandmother, right? Like, that wasn't on the table for her. But had she been able to have access to a sauna or some of these other ways, like, what's the power behind figuring, solving that Rubik's Cube, that puzzle, you know, to where you can get there? If there's power behind it, like, is it worth putting the energy in to solve that? I think sometimes it is.
Absolutely. Yeah. Asking those creative questions. Is there anything else that you want the listeners to know from your experience in helping so many people out there with these lifestyle habits to really feel better?
Yeah, I think that one of the biggest things is it's not always going to feel good. Like, making the decision for your health is not always going to feel as, excuse the term, but it is what it is, as sexy. As we, you know, sometimes when we first start hearing about, oh, these things are available to us, I can do these things, there is a power that I have over my health, we get an element of just real serendipitous excitement in us. And it feels sexy and it's attractive and there's magnetism to it.
Yeah.
And if we always wait for that magnetism to hit us, that serendipity to hit us, we're going to miss out on a lot of opportunity to gain, make those small steps in favor of our health. So I think that the reminder that it's not always going to feel sexy, it's not always going to be jazz hands, it's not always going to be serendipitous and magnetic. Sometimes it's like, oh, this is a decision I'm making because I know it's the thing that serves me best right now.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. And really finding strategies, because we know that willpower is a fickle friend that is not reliable to last after that initial surge, like you mentioned. And so that is where these real life strategies, that is where support comes in. That is where science comes in, you know, what the science behind behavior change, the science behind how we actually make changes that work with our body, with ourselves, versus trying to just do what everybody else is doing for the sake of doing it.
Yeah.
Such a great reminder. I'm going to add that, you know, I talk about science, I talk about support, you know, self-knowledge being so key, and absolutely strategies. Those are my four S's. So now I get to add a fifth. So it may not feel sexy, but we still keep going through it.
Yeah. Yeah, like absolutely.
Well, how can people get in touch with you if they want to hear more?
Oh, if anybody wants to find me, I'm so grateful. I used to not like it that my mother gave me a squirrely name. She gave me a strange name. She gave my brother David Michael. That's my brother's name. She couldn't give me one normal name, but it's worked out well because you can find me at Delaine MD on any social medias. Facebook, I'm pretty active on, but it's Delaine MD, DelaneMD. And then I have a website, www.delanemd.com. And that has my podcast and that has how to contact me. And all of the social medias also have how to contact me. So
all the good things. I love it. I love it so much what you're doing. And I love how our work can complement each other. And we really are here with the same message that we can take control of our health. And like you said, we can use a little less of the traditional healthcare system by dialing up these lifestyle factors. So I'm just so happy you're here and that we're doing this work.
Well, thank you, Amy. You're doing amazing work too. I love it. Again, you know, autoimmune disease has a really tender spot in my heart. And there's a lot of people that I love deeply that benefit from this work that you're doing. And I'm telling them all about it. So thank you.
Awesome. Right back at you. Right back at you. Bye. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Habit Hub for Autoimmune Health. I am forever grateful for the time and energy you share with me. Are you ready to take what you learn here to the next level and apply it? Come visit me at amybeheimercoaching.com. That's www.amybeheimercoaching.com. I know firsthand that health is about feeling better today and doing all we can to enjoy a healthier tomorrow. Let's do both together. One last thing, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss the next episode where I just might cover the habit that your body has been waiting for. If you're feeling extra generous, please leave a rating and review. It really is the best way to help other warriors find us here. You can find me on Instagram at Amy Beheimer Coaching. Come follow. Special thanks to my editor, Sarah. Talk soon.